Hello, this is Jennifer Hill, and the show is Finding Common Ground. This is WBFY, Belfast Community Radio, 100.9 FM in Belfast, Maine, and we are streaming live at belfastcommunityradio.org. This is a call-in program today, and you're welcome to give us a call here in the basement of Waterfall Arts at 338-2277, that's area code 207. Randall Parr was born in Camden, Maine, and attended the University of New Hampshire. He received advanced degrees from the University of Massachusetts and Bentley College and is a former naval officer. He's an economist with 30 years of experience in the public and private sector. Randall, welcome to the program.
Good to be here. Thank you.
And we're here to talk about the book you published in 2014, Occupying a New Maine Economy, Creating a State-Owned Bank. So I wanted to start by talking about money, which you quote Graham Towers as saying, banks create money, that's what they're for, making an entry in a book, that is all. Each and every time a bank makes a loan, new bank credit is created, brand new money. Is that true?
That's absolutely correct. Actually, it's basic accounting. And when a person takes out a loan in a bank, the bank actually creates an asset called, I think it's a receivable asset, basically an accounts receivable asset, which is really basically new money. And then it creates a credit against that asset, you know, with double entry bookkeeping. Yeah, they have allowed to do that. So that increases the total assets of the bank. And all banks do that, except, some...
I can understand a bookkeeping, but it's hard to imagine that that is the way money is created.
That's the basic way money comes into the economy, because people do inherit money from previous generations and so forth, and there are some other ways when the government deficit spends, money comes into the economy that way and increases the money supply. But the major reason is actually when banks make loans.
This is the thing that I have never been able to figure out, money. You know, like it seems like it ought to be so straightforward, but it isn't. It's very complicated.
Yes and no. I mean, it's really quite simple once you understand how it works. But it might be complicated for someone who is used to hearing the common myths about money, which I think are, pretty much part of our culture, not only here in the United States.
What's a myth about money? That's good. What's a myth?
The myth is, I think people create money when they do work. It's true that the individual gets money, but the money is really transferred from one, from a business, one individual or owners of a given business to that worker and so forth. So that's not the origin of money. The origin is when the banks actually make the loan to the business. That's when the money is created.
And they don't have to get permission from anywhere. I mean, you think of money. Well, for one thing, it gets printed somewhere on the paper. That's a creation. I mean,
people look at another kind of a myth is that you have a piece of paper, say, for a given bank, and it's your monthly account statement. That's your money and so forth. And so if you did a balance sheet of yourself, for instance, and my assets and my liabilities, if you're in accounting, and you will look at that as an asset. But also to the bank, they have it down as a liability, but you don't really have the cash in your pocket. So you might actually one day wake up and find out that there was a freeze on your account in the middle of the night, and the money is not there and so forth. So
we know that from banking online. You you don't have the cash in your hand, but you go online and there you see I've got so much there in the bank. But that's not real. That's just an electronic number.
Well, I wanted to point out that that could be a private bank or a public bank could do the same thing. Whereas, if the state, for instance, had its own public bank like North Dakota, the state of North Dakota, the members of the state of the agencies and so forth in North Dakota could put the money in the bank, and they would have a piece of paper that says they have money in the bank. They do it now in Maine, but it's a private bank. So the Maine state government is more or less subsidizing the private banks. So the money is in the bank, and actually, it could be a public bank, and the money could stay in Maine. But as is, a lot of the money is going out of the state.
Yeah, I want to talk about that in a minute. I want to talk about this, these state-owned banks. In your book, you say that President Eisenhower's Treasury Secretary said, when a bank makes a loan, the money is not taken from anyone else's deposit. It was not previously paid to the bank by anyone. It's new money created by the bank for use of the borrower. Now, that's not what the guy said in It's a Wonderful Life. Remember that movie in It's a Wonderful Life? He said, you can't, your money's in his house, right. And your money's in his house.
I know. That's the myth that bankers like to leave.
Was it true then in the movie?
It's always been, that was always false. That It's a Wonderful Life in that respect. But he mentioned Jimmy Stewart talked about he didn't have the money in the bank. Actually,
right.
It's invested in
right.
You know, Sam O'Malley's tool shed
that's
or
right.
whatever. You know,
I love that movie.
And that's true. And that's true. Yeah, I do too.
When in the book it says when banks make loans, they create money. The role of the central bank, and that's a federal bank, the central bank.
A central bank is like the United States is the Federal Reserve System, and it's 12 banks. But other countries have like just one central bank.
We have 12?
We have 12. One
sounds
for each
like
region.
Overkill. Oh.
Yes.
And so we're so big. And the role of the central bank is to preside over a legal order that effectively grants banks the exclusive right to create IOUs of a certain kind. IOUs that the government will recognize as legal tender by its willingness to accept them in payment of taxes. There's really no limit on how much banks could create, provided they can find someone willing to borrow it.
That's true.
It's hard to imagine that the only way to create money is to borrow it. I don't know why that's hard for me to grasp.
I know. Maybe that's the reason why we have had a hard time convincing folks that public banking would be in their best interest. It's a very hard concept to grasp, and I believe John Kenneth Galbraith said it's so simple that it boggles the mind, or something like that.
Yeah. Well, the whole concept of money, it's just not as straightforward as, you know, you would think a dollar is a dollar is a dollar, but I got to reading last night an article that said that, we used to have gold standing behind every dollar. And then, you know, Cape Bretton Woods, they had this meeting and got rid of the gold standard. So people got really nervous about that. And so in 1974, Henry Kissinger made a deal with the Saudi family, and this idea of petrodollars, which I've never seen anywhere before, I read it in your book, which meant that if you were any country other than the United States and you wanted to buy Saudi Arabia oil, you had to pay in American dollars. So if I'm Canadian and I want Saudi oil, I have to somehow get a hold of American dollars to do that. And those are called petrodollars.
That's right. And actually what that does is it strengthens the United States dollar.
Yeah.
And because they have to, you know, basically exchange their dollars for American dollars.
So when you think about it, I mean, you know, it gives our currency a prominent position in the global economy. But basically, did we arrange a deal so that we can print off as much paper as we want because it's nothing behind it? And treating others training others for stuff so they can get our currency for their product, like China. So we're printing off paper. We're sending it to, give some to you, Saudi Arabia, for the oil. And, oh, China, do you need some of our dollars? Here, give us some of your goods. We'll give you some dollars.
That's true, but it's backed by the United States government. So I think that's pretty strong government backing. We say there's nothing behind it. There's no gold behind it anymore. Actually, at the end of World War II, the United States had all of the gold, basically because of all of the countries in the world, from the Pacific Ocean to the Atlantic Ocean, were basically destroyed. And the United States had most of the world's gold supply. So we couldn't really continue on with the gold standard.
Right.
And actually, the real thing that broke, I would say, the bank is when Richard Nixon was president, Charles de Gaulle of France demanded gold, you know, for all of the dollar bills that, you know, that he had in his treasury. And, of course, there weren't enough to pay it off. And President Nixon took us off the gold standard for good.
Did he really?
And it's in the 70s, I believe 74 or something like that.
Wow.
Or 73. Anyway, but that's how we are no longer on the gold
standard. So now we stand, the United States government stands behind the currency, so we're going to make good on it, and now we have a deficit in the trillions and going up really fast.
Mm-hmm.
And hasn't there been, like, some reluctance to go higher with the deficit?
Yes, that's always a big game every year, and but actually the deficit is not as big a problem as I think it's made out to be, because actually the money is owed mostly to ourselves or other members of our society, and
because it's been lent? Because
well,
it's been borrowed?
I would just say the main state government invests in treasury bills is one of its assets, and the actual value of those bills have gone down in the past 18 months by a considerable amount of money.
Now, wait a minute. Can you slow down just a minute? First of all, I want to let people know that this is Finding Common Ground, and Jennifer Hill, today I'm speaking with Randall Parr, an economist, about money and the economy and the possibility of creating a state-owned bank. So can you tell me what a treasury bond is? What does that mean?
Well, when we say that we have a huge budget deficit, we have a huge budget deficit, and that deficit is actually in various treasury securities. Because the Treasury has to issue...
What is a security? Does it on a piece of paper, like a bill?
It's a bond or a note or a bill, there are Treasury bills, Treasury notes, Treasury bonds.
Do they all look alike?
Bills? They have things printed on them, like dollar bills and so forth, yes. Physically. Another thing we ought to think about is the fact that with computers now, so much of the money supply is really online, that the physical part of it is a really minor, small portion of our economy these days. A large amount of it is in computers and usually in banks and so forth. So, but yes.
All these documents are stored on various servers where
You're getting beyond my knowledge, ability, and so forth. So I'm sure that they're in vaults somewhere, but I can't.
Thumb drives, that. Somebody's vault.
Right.
Well, yeah. So you were telling us about treasury notes and the deficit. So the treasury notes are some kind of borrowing?
Treasury notes are just simple, what they call note is a financial instrument or a security that basically a promise to pay from one person to another over a certain amount of time. And these are the notes that say that the U.S. Treasury will pay the bearer, whoever owns it at that time, a certain amount of money at a certain time, and the whole balance at the end of, whatever the period is.
What is the purpose of them?
financing. It's a financing instrument.
So it keeps does it slow down the economy sometimes?
Yes and no. I mean, since actually money is created, whenever money is borrowed, I would say it means that there will be a lot more of these in the economy than there were before, because I think that would increase the economy and so forth.
Stimulate the economy?
I would think it would, yes, stimulate the economy in general. But there are regional economies, you know, and Maine doesn't really follow the Wall Street economy too much.
Right.
We kind of get what the leftovers are from other stronger capital centers of the world.
So we've been talking about the federal government, the whole shebang, and I want to talk some more about that before we enter into Maine's economy. But I guess, were we finished talking about these petrodollars? which I think is so remarkable. It just, you know, somehow if you're printing off paper and if everybody has to go through you to get the paper, somehow that puts you in this amazingly strong position, it seems to me.
That's correct. And one of the issues, and we've had that, the United States has had that for a long time, and unfortunately, right now, we're faced with losing some of our, I would say, edge that way in terms of the strength of the U.S. dollar in a couple of different ways. One is that China is emerging as the largest economy in the world, having almost half the world's population, and is emerging as the largest economy. It's been growing at such a huge rate, like between 7 and 15% per year, whereas the United States has been barely growing 1% to 2% a year, and they're
for
overtaking
how long,
us.
The United States? Is it recently?
Well,
since
2008 crash.
Yeah.
We have never really recovered the growth rate that we had before that.
Yeah.
So that China is going to no longer be paying U.S. dollars for oil and so forth. It's going to
renegotiate with Saudi
it's
going to Arabia.
Demand. It's going to demand that it is yuan, its currency, be actually accepted for oil and other goods and services and so forth.
Because you know, also with the fossil fuels, you know, we had gold, now we've got oil. With these standards kind of being the standard bearers of the dollar, what happens when we go off fossil fuel?
That's the other point I was going to make.
Oh, good.
There are predictions that fossil fuels will be obsolete by 2030 or 2040, around there.
Somebody's optimistic.
right. And when that happens, no longer will the petrodollar be of much concern, because electric vehicles are going to take over the next 2 or 3 years.
So you're an optimist.
I'm an optimist. Well, obviously the petroleum companies are fighting this tooth and nail, and they have, for instance, solar power. They've stopped solar power in like 10 states, made it illegal, actually, because they've controlled a lot of the state legislatures. And we have... They're going to try to fight it, but I think it's inevitable that eventually that petroleum will go away.
Excuse me. Well, I wanted to talk about derivatives. We heard a lot about them in the 2008 economic crash, that they were unregulated and gumming up the system in a way that few people understood, including bankers. So derivatives are speculative banking instruments people use to hedge their bets on investments. So shorts and puts allow somebody to invest in a project financially and then bet the project will fail so that they'll get money either way. So the fact that they're not regulated creates a real snarl, or did create a real snarl of economic activity that it's difficult to trace.
Actually, the 2008 crash was caused by the failure to regulate derivatives. If we had regulated derivatives, and there was an incident that happened in the Clinton administration where the Secretary of the Treasury, Larry Summers, had like five or six bankers in his room. And there were Brooks Lee Born. I don't know if you remember the CFTC, which is Commodities Futures Trading Commission, wanted to regulate derivatives, and they basically said, they basically said, we will not do this. And that, a lot of people say, could be traced as one of the major causes, if not the major cause, of the crash of 2008.
Well, you're betting against yourself.
Not only that, but in many cases with securitization, it's not on the books. The derivatives, right. A lot of them are not on the books. So it's what they call the shadow economy. And
because they don't have to be, because it's like insurance is regulated, but derivatives aren't.
That's right. But actually, you can go and you'll see a lot of the really largest banks in the world have more money in derivatives than they actually have assets on their books. For instance, I think one of the biggest ones is J.P. Morgan Chase, which is the merger of thousands of banks for 20 years ago, but the two biggest ones being J.P. Morgan Company and the Chase Manhattan Bank. And they are the largest bank corporation in the United States. But they have 10 times the amount of money invested on the shadow economy in derivatives. And that was never really fixed in the Dodd-Frank bill, which was supposed to fix all of the problems of causing the 2008 crash.
Which is now, the Dodd-Frank is no more. Is that right?
No, it's still, it's being debated strongly in Washington. They're trying to eliminate what regulation that it was there, but not strengthen it. But actually, it needs to be strengthened, I think.
So basically, you've got some project that wants to go forward, and you've got all these hovering bees betting on, is it going to go? Is it not going to go? I'll put this money forward. I'll say no. I'll say yes.
That's right.
And then it's all speculation around the real substantive project, whatever it is.
That's correct on just about anything. And there are several different kinds of derivatives. There's credit default swaps are the biggie. There was a great movie called The Big Short. I don't know if you saw it.
I did.
Recently.
I did. It was a really good movie.
Those were credit default swaps. And he bet against the U.S. economy, and he won, actually, and won millions of dollars as a result of that.
There's big money in this. This is why, of course, follow the money trail, and you get to where things are happening.
Right.
So it's kind of a gambling game. This is the kind of thing that happens to money. It's not straightforward. It has spins to it.
Absolutely. It's very complicated. And finance is, I would say, for young people, if there's any young people listening, it's a great field to examine, because I think there's no end to the amount of learning that you can do in this field. And also you might have some rewards financially.
Yeah, hopefully not too many. I wanted to say that I read an article from The Sun in May 2018. Derivatives are but one way the national banking system is being manipulated. Les Leopold writes that the Bank of North Dakota lost no money during the Great Recession. And this is a bank we're going to be talking about. It's a public-owned bank, state-owned bank, the Bank of North Dakota. Lost no money during the Great Recession because it hadn't bought any derivatives. The bank president said, I didn't understand them, so I didn't buy them.
So yeah, that's a great quote.
This is a good reason for having a state-owned bank in Maine, maybe.
Yes, but you can't guarantee that. I would say that all state employees or that people who might be employed by a bank are going to have great judgment. I mean, hopefully they will. But there are a lot of things that could go wrong if we tried to completely go with a public bank. So we have to be very careful that we structure it right to make sure that I would personally like to see that, you know, derivatives, if such a bank were created, to be not lawful, not be an investment tool that bank could use. So,
you know, it's one thing when two people are playing craps and you want to, you want to bet on who's going to win. I say he's going to roll a 7. I say he's going to roll an 11, whatever. That's one thing if it's a game. But in the economy where it's a business and this business venture is starting a new product line or whatever and putting out stock and these games are going on, which is, you know, are they going to win? It just heightens everything. It creates this, I don't know. It doesn't not seem useful. It doesn't seem hearty and honest and real and in the way we need our economy to be.
Absolutely. I mean, I think that we need to have a stable economy, a stable growing economy. And to some extent, the fact that Maine has so many small and cooperative businesses, I think, that are not really dependent on the federal, you know, the national economy and Wall Street and so forth, I think that it, in a way, has more stability. But North Dakota also has a large amount of stability, and largely due to the Bank of North Dakota.
Okay. This is Jennifer Hill. The show is Finding Common Ground, and I'm here today with Randall Parr, economist, and we're discussing creating a state-owned bank in Maine. We're going to be discussing that in a few minutes. I just wanted to say that WBFY 100.9 FM in Belfast. This is Belfast Community Radio, and we are streaming live on belfastcommunityradio.org. And this is a call-in show. If you have a question or a comment, our phone number here is 338-2277, and that's area code 207. Looks like we have a caller right now.
Hello.
So,
okay,
let's...
Hold on just a minute.
Rika?
Go ahead.
Hello, caller?
Hello, yes?
Yes, go ahead.
First of all, I'd like to say that this is just a most fascinating topic. I think this is just very interesting, and I probably have about 1,000 questions, but let me just limit it to...
pick your favorite.
I understand the Chinese government has a whole lot of federal debt. I guess they're... I'm just wondering, what's the downside if the government just keeps lending money? I mean, what's the downside if they just cash them all in one day?
Yeah, that's true. They're holding the debt, and they could cash them in. And but they're also really dependent on the U.S. economy to buy up. And as far as that goes, the other economies of the world that buy all of the products that they manufacture. And so I'm sure that if they did cash them all in, it would cause an international depression or a recession at least. And they'll find that a lot of their businesses won't be able to produce as much, and it'll affect them. So I think that's why they're kind of, not really threatening us with that. Although we never know what happens in these meetings of our president and the president of China and so forth. But
I guess my point is that if they cash them all in, it wouldn't be some major problem for us. We just hand them a bunch of bills or something. I don't know how that would work.
Well, what they would do is they would sell, you know, they could sell them on the international markets. And if they were, then the value of those bills would go down, and the actual probably the interest rates do the opposite thing, which is to go up. So
It's probably very complicated.
It would very, you know, probably crash the world economy if they tried to sell them all at once.
Okay, well, listen, I'll thank you so much for answering that, and I'll listen to the show. Thank you.
Great. Thank you very much, caller.
I wanted to get to talking about this, the bank. We talked about money and all the, or a few of the games. There are lots of games surrounding money. But for me, a bank is a bank, you know. You go down the street, there they all lined up there. Damariscotta, there's Bangor Savings, Camden, Key Bank. They're all lined up. They all look alike. They all lend money. But the way they operate on the back end is different. And then there's credit unions too. So you quote the Maine People's Alliance in 2013 as saying in Maine, over 56% of bank deposits are controlled by three Wall Street and multinational banks, TD, Key Bank, and Bank of America, and that profits made from the interest Maine residents pay leaks out of state. Maine has been overly reliant on federal programs like the Farmers Home Administration. So how would having a state-owned bank change the economic vitality of our state?
Well, for one thing, Maine has $100 million in debt service payments they make each year on loans and so forth. With a state-owned bank, if we put all of the state's money into the state-owned bank, the bank itself could buy up that debt so that we would be paying that interest to ourselves. So we wouldn't.
I want to go into that in a minute.
We no longer have. Well, this one answers one part of your question. That's one of the
Wants more explanation because that's a major factor. But how does the back end of the bank, what they do with the money that comes in the front door, how does that affect us in Maine? Because it definitely does. In other words, if that money goes out of state, it's not here to invest in things like farms or working capital.
That's right. And there were a lot of corporations also that are multinational corporations with bases in Maine. And actually, the profits from those don't come to Maine. They go to wherever their stockholders, you know, live, which is large. Many of them are not even in the United States. And so
it's gratifying to know that we're helping these other places,
right,
you know, with their economy. But it seems like the state of Maine could really use some help right now. We're kind of a rural state, you know. There's a lot of investments that could be done here to get some economic growth. There's a lot of ingenuity here. And if we gave some of the money to the people here to start new ideas, new businesses, new concerns.
That's right. And according to statistics I have seen, Maine has the fourth highest rate of child hunger of all states. And we also have one of the highest poverty rates as a percent of the population. And if we can get those down, I think we have a relatively high unemployment rate. We have had. It's going down now, yes. But
a lot of the jobs are
A lot of the reasons why it's going down is because a lot of the working force has left. We've had a huge out-migration from Maine of people in the 20 to 40 younger
my
age
daughter
working group
in California.
Okay, that includes one.
Making really good money.
Yes.
Are we sending any money to California?
Probably. Yes.
Probably.
Well, Wells Fargo Bank, I think, is based in California, so they probably.
Well, I don't have any questions about cooperatives, but it surely is on my mind a lot. Is Maine? You have a lot of independent-minded folk who. Maybe they don't like working at subsistence jobs where people are kind of can be rude and pushy. But the cooperative is another business model that this Maine-owned bank could foster the growth of.
Yeah, absolutely. A cooperative is rooted in the Maine economy, so they're less likely to just take up and leave and leave a huge group of unemployed behind them and people selling houses. Well, another point I'd like to mention is the value of housing, which has not really changed much, in some cases gone down in Maine. And one of them is, for instance, I live in Appleton, and over the past year, the total valuation in Appleton has fallen by $1.8 million from around 119 in 2000.
Are you talking about the combined taxes of everybody in Appleton?
The total valuation of real estate in Appleton has gone down by $1.8 million.
Why?
In 1 year. Well, a complex number of reasons, supply and demand and so forth. I'm trying to get at the basis of that, but I don't have the answers to that question really right now.
Yeah.
But I do think that property values would be more stable and less likely to fall if we had a public state-owned bank. It would keep housing prices more stable.
How would that be?
Because I think that less money would be leaking, or we said a leak similar to Niagara Falls.
So people would borrow money for their mortgages they would actually borrow from the main state-owned bank rather than one of these other banks.
I think people would be able to get loans at lower interest rates in Maine, so they would be able to buy housing and keep the value of the property up to what it, what it is. Now they have to go to a private bank, in many cases paying higher than free market interest rates.
You talk a lot in the book about North Dakota and their state-owned bank. Eric Hardmeyer, chief executive of the Bank of North Dakota, is quoted in the New York Times, "The Bank of North Dakota is successful because we are partners with North Dakota's financial institutions, not competitors. This was so important that one of the bank's founding principles was to be helpful to and to assist in the development of state and national banks and other financial institutions and public corporations within the state, and not in any manner to destroy or be harmful to existing financial institutions. This directive continues to guide every decision made at the bank today." Would Maine's state-owned bank be the same?
Well, one never knows how one might design the Maine State Bank if it were designed, but I would recommend highly that we do follow the model of North Dakota.
They're doing pretty well.
Yes, and they just recently announced their profits for last year, which were record profits, even though the oil industry, which is a major force in their state, has drastically declined in the past 5 or 10 years. And actually, the state of North Dakota gets a large amount of its revenues from oil. So it has shown...
I have a quote about that.
Oh, good.
Same guy who wrote in that article in The Sun said, "North Dakota has one of the lowest unemployment rates in the country. At first, people credited the oil boom, but now there is an oil glut. Employment is high because the public bank provides a financial infrastructure for the people and the businesses of the state. This makes the case for your argument that North Dakota's robust economy is not about oil, but about state-owned bank."
Yes, yeah. So, and the fact that North Dakota continued its record profits every year over the past 10 years, the profits, the net income from the state-owned bank has been higher than the year before, and they have a 17% return on investment.
That's pretty good.
And we're actually, Maine, if you look at the return on investment for Maine, it's in the neighborhood of under 1%, like with the rest of
that's
the
loser.
National economy. Yeah, so actually, it's true that a bank's return on investment is not the same as the return on investment on savings or money invested in bonds and stocks, but still, this is a substantial amount of difference.
So there are issues with the state of Maine's operations. You always hear, oh, geez, we're projecting a shortfall. Oh, we don't really have the money. You know, the state needs a certain amount of money to operate, pay their people and stuff. And it's like, oh, now we don't have it. So the state has to go through these machinations of, oh, we got to borrow from this, borrow from that. And there's all this financing happening. And this is super expensive. I mean, I can't even believe the figures that you quoted in your book of what this all this financing costs, and that we could avoid these costs is what you were referring to earlier.
We could reduce the costs. I don't think we can completely avoid the costs.
Because we would have this money. Now, what would it take to start this bank? Would millions? Billions?
Well, at the present time, there was an interesting report that any person out there can see if they log into Maine.gov and go to the Treasurer's Cash Pool, do a Google search on Treasurer's Cash Pool, Maine Treasurer's Cash Pool, and a report comes out every month and it shows exactly where the state's treasurer invests the money of the state. And at the present, over half of it is out of state.
Interesting.
And so instead of investing out of state, we could invest in a state-owned bank.
Makes sense.
And so we don't really need, I'm saying, that we don't need a lot of money to capitalize the bank, which is one of the myths also that were brought to us when we tried to get a public bank bill passed in the legislature.
Yes, because you ran for public office the same year your book was published and were not successful, but I see that last year Senator Miramont from Camden introduced LD 237, an act to establish a state bank. But he offered that to the Insurance and Financial Services Committee, which you were saying didn't make it out of that committee, maybe because it was the wrong committee. Maybe it should have been an Economic Development Committee?
Yes, but still... I would say that...
Because they came down hard on you, the insurance industry.
I know, but I'm saying that...
I mean, the banking industry.
Banking and insurance, both.
Yeah.
And actually, though, there needs to be a fact checker, I would say, with the with each committee in the legislature who could verify the statements that were made. And again...
But they bought it.
There's a myth about money, and they are basically trying to promote... this myth about money that we have to appropriate a huge amount of money to capitalize a bank and so forth, and it's just going to take the money, and not recognizing that when you have a checking account, the bank actually has your money, but you write a check against it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it only comes, the rubber comes to the road only when that check goes to the bank and is cleared and so forth. So really, we could do the same thing with the state-owned bank. The state-owned bank could have checking accounts in it, and the various state agencies would have checking accounts with the state bank. And instead of with banks that invest in pipelines in North Dakota and
Randall,
elsewhere.
Randall, it's kind of brilliant. It just seems kind of brilliant to me that we could have our own investments in Maine in a bank. It just seems kind of brilliant. And I totally get how the existing industries would be coming out and being upset, just like the fossil fuel industries are upset. You know, people don't want change. But it makes so much sense what you're saying.
Yes, absolutely. And also they have a lot to lose by making a change. And so that is makes them a very vested and I would say rooted factor in the economy.
Well, we're approaching the season for, electing officials. And I think actually next week I'm going to have on the program a candidate for governor, Betsy Sweet. And I'm definitely going to be bringing this up with her, seeing how she feels about
Very
that.
Very good. She has a copy of my book, and I hope that she read it and can answer your
Maybe
question.
I'll let her know we might be talking about this so she can be ready.
Okay.
Read it like I did. You say that in the 2008 financial collapse destroyed 40% of the world's wealth. What do you mean by that?
Yes, well, wealth is a very fragile thing, and it exists on paper. People buying and selling securities and stocks and all sorts of commodities all the time, every day. And it's just that the value of it got wiped out because, well, we do you remember what happened? In 2008, I think it's, well, in the United States, it started with Bear Stearns, I believe, one of the largest banks in the country, declared bankruptcy. And the Federal Reserve,
that was wealth and it was gone.
Yeah, it was wealth and largely in the form of derivatives. Basically, the derivatives basically crashed. And so the Federal Reserve engineered a merger between Bear Stearns and J.P. Morgan Chase, one of their biggest competitors in investment banks, by the way, and further concentrated that. And then there was a date, and a lot of other things happened. The Federal National Mortgage Association, known as Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, both of those went belly up because of derivatives, largely mortgage-backed
derivatives. So these derivatives are considered wealth?
They are considered wealth. And actually, they mortgage-backed securities are layered on, tiered one on top of the other. And this was in that book, I believe, The Big Short, and another book as well, another movie, I should say, as well. There's what they have, collateralized debt obligations, is a type of derivative that has mortgages behind it. And a lot of these people, these were mortgages that were kind of questionable, what they call Alt-A, which are liar's loans, you know, where people really didn't have the money to pay back the mortgage. So they were very, very risky. And a lot of them went down, even though they were rated AAA by Moody's and so forth, investor services. So anyway, so a whole lot of banks went down in 2008.
So that's what we're calling wealth.
Yes. And that's and
well, it is an interesting word. that could be developed in different ways. I really appreciate your coming on the program today. And I read your book and I really got a lot out of it. And I love on page 149, there's a quote that I would like for you to read, but you didn't bring your glasses today. If you want me to, I can read it.
Okay,
would
you
like that?
I'd appreciate that.
Robert F. Kennedy once stated that the gross national product counts air pollution and cigarette advertising and ambulances to clear our highways of carnage. It counts special locks for our doors and the jails for the people who break them. It counts the destruction of the redwood and the loss of our natural wonder in chaotic sprawl. It counts napalm and nuclear warheads and armored cars for the police to fight the riots in our cities. It counts the television programs which glorify violence in order to sell toys to our children. Yet the gross national product does not allow for the health of our children, the quality of their education, or the joy of their play. It does not include the beauty of our poetry or the strength of our marriages, the intelligence of our public debate, or the integrity of our public officials. It measures neither our wit nor our courage, neither our wisdom nor our learning, neither our compassion nor our devotion to country. It measures everything, in short, except that which makes life worthwhile. And it can tell us everything about America, except why we are proud that we are Americans. Nice work.
Thank you very much.
Culminates the whole. I really appreciate your being here today. Can you tell people how they could get a hold of you if they're interested in joining your effort to get a state-owned bank in Maine?
Yes, we have a website called mainepublicbanking.com. And please feel free to read that. And there's also email if you have any questions or if you would like, you're interested in a copy of my book. Send it to main.public.banking@gmail.com. There's also a website, OccupyingANewMainEconomy.com, which could also be accessed with OANME.com. So feel free to give me a call or send me an email, and I'll put you on my mailing list.
Cool. So
thank you.
It's great you're doing this, Randall. Thanks so much again for coming on the show.
Thank you very much.
Next Saturday, Finding Common Ground, we'll be hosting Betsy Sweet, candidate for Maine State Governor. Excited about that. And I wanted to let everyone know that the following Saturday, May 12th, at 6 p.m. at the Belfast Bay Boathouse, right there on the water, we're having the Maine All Care Spring Launch Party, and it's free and it's open to everyone. We're hoping to get universal health care in Maine, and so we'll start out with local beer, and we have wine, and we'll have food from area cooks, and then we'll be playing Jeopardy, and then after that we'll watch a short movie about universal health care and how it's happening in other countries and how we can do it here. So that is Saturday the 12th. Don't miss that. That's going to be really fun. And have a great week, listeners. I really appreciate your listening, and we will talk to you next week.